I'm Gab, he's Jules. It's overcast here on a rare Wednesday edition of the Gab and Jules Show. But it doesn't matter because inside it's all sunny for England. Because, of course, they knocked out Germany. Less sunny for Jules. Sunny for all the teams. We're through the quarterfinals. We have a full show for you. We'll be dealing with all that stuff. But we're going to start at Wembley, where we're joined by Stuart Robson. Robbo, very simple. There's a lot of negativity from some quarters about the way Gareth Southgate was playing, some of the choices he was making, some of the big name players who couldn't get on the pitch, Foden, Grealish, Mount, Rashford, Sancho. That's a lot. That's impressive. But in the end, that system worked, and they beat Germany 2-0, and it was a deserved victory. Is he vindicated?
Vindicated to a certain degree, because he's won the game and he stopped Germany's wing-backs having the control they had against Portugal. And I think that's why he played the system, because the easiest thing as a coach is to match what the opposition do, you know, react to what they're doing. I was disappointed when I saw the system, and I was disappointed with England in the first half. And I thought Germany, when the game was played slowly and it was played at their tempo, they looked the better team. But in Sterling, they had a player that can run with the ball. But to answer your question, Gareth Southgate was vindicated because they won the game in the end. I don't think England played particularly well. They only created two or three chances. Germany had two big, big chances that they should have taken. I don't think England deserved to win, nor did Germany. It was a fairly even game. England took their chances at the end of it.
Are you talking there about the Muller chance and the Werner chances? And look, I get all the negativity, Robbo, but this was the night that they tore old Yogi down.
Yogi Bear.
This is a big deal. England actually won a football match in the knockout stage of a major competition in 90 minutes. That had never happened before.
What? No way.
In the history of the Euros.
Wow.
Even in the World Cup, since 1966, when they were playing at home, it's only happened four times. I have a list here. Against Sweden in 2018, against Ecuador in 2006.
Oh, great teams.
Against Denmark in 2002, and stop making fun. And then 1986 against Paraguay. How about that, right? So, this is a big deal. Wow. They had never won in the 90 minutes in a knockout phase at the Euros.
It is. It is. But I agree with everything Robbo said. For a long time, Jordan Pickford was England's best player, which is never a good thing. It's never a good thing if your keeper is your best player. And he was, because he saved Werner's one-on-one. He served the Havertz sort of half volley, and then Müller shot wide. But then I thought England were very resilient. That's what they did. Same expected goals, less possession, but very solid, well-organized, well-drilled. It was not conceding first, and then tried to create something. And the way he brought Grealish in, the key is Grealish. The key is Grealish coming on for the last 25 minutes when the Germans are more tired, when the Germans are thinking, okay, what do we do? Do we go forward? Do we stay deep? Where they were not really sure what to do. And Grealish made the difference. For me, Grealish made the difference. And I guess that's Southgate's call.
I mean, on paper, I think both could have had impact subs. Obviously, Leroy Sané, Gnabry could have been the guys on the other end. England, you know, half a dozen options there. I want to turn it over to Germany. Jogi Löw leaves us. We can't forget this is a person who delivered a World Cup. This is a person who made Germany really a dominant team going back to 2006. Jürgen Klinsmann, when he was his assistant, always praises Jogi Löw for what he brought. In this game, we've been very critical of him. We'll be critical of him later when we get more granular on the Gab and Jules podcast. But I want to ask you about dropping Gundogan for Leon Goretzka. Goretzka, who had effectively saved them in the last game against Hungary. Was that the right choice? Did it move the needle? Did it maybe put a little too much pressure on Kroos when the game tended to speed up?
I wouldn't say so, because, you know, when you're at the game, and I thought Goretzka was their best midfield player in terms of he was dynamic. He had that early run where he got I think it was Stones got himself booked. I'm trying to think who came back and got booked. Rice was racing back against Goretzka and got himself booked. I thought he made a couple of good interceptions. I thought he passed the ball quite well. I thought he was one of Germany's best players, Goretzka. It did leave a lot of pressure on Toni Kroos defensively at times, but I don't think England really caused him too many problems. The one player that caused Germany problems was Sterling when he came infield, got away from Ginter and started to run infield and make things happen. And Saka on a couple of occasions in the first half. I don't think there was anything wrong with Germany's tactics. Germany controlled the play when it was at a slow tempo. The only player that changed the tempo of the game was usually Sterling.
Jules, the reading, speaking to German colleagues, And what we saw in the group stage is that this is Germany. They're not a good team right now. They're not in a good place. There's serious issues with the manager and the system. Man for man, they're probably not as talented as England anyway, before you get into the difference between a manager who's a lame duck who knows he's leaving and a manager who maybe has some limits, like Southgate, but he's a guy everybody loves, is outstanding, and they'll seem happy to play for. So that maybe it's not surprising. You know, they haven't toppled Galactus here. Is that a little bit like after the fact, kind of, or is it just simply stating fact that this is who Germany are?
Yeah, I think it's a bit of both, Gab. I think they like a striker, but like a really good one for a country that produced so many great strikers through the years and in the past.
Yeah, they kind of stopped about 20 years ago, but yeah.
Maybe, yeah, you can still count Klose as a good striker.
Yeah, it's only because he played until 40. That he,
I know, but still.
But whatever, yeah.
But that's me saying, but then you're right. I think it's a bit of both. It's a bit like of maybe not being as strong mentally as they used to, not having the leadership that they used to, having... Ljubilev should have gone in 2018. This is a fact. And they could have rebuilt with someone else between 2018 and today, and they probably would not be in that mess.
I wonder, to be honest, the fact that they were in the game so long against England, the fact that they had those big chances, which they missed. The Muller one goes in, we could be seeing a psychodrama at the end. If anything, to me, suggests that maybe this is actually their level, and it would have been an overachievement had they knocked out England, who... Mm. Top to bottom, I think, are a better team. But we're going to get into it far more on the Gab and Jules podcast. You can download it wherever you get your podcasts. All right, podcast listeners, you're still with us. We're going to get more granular. Now, we talked before about, was he going to switch to a back three?
Yeah.
Right, which he hadn't had a chance to try in any of the games because the City and Chelsea players were out. I thought it was the wrong decision. For the simple reason that I take your point, Robbo, about matching up the opposition. But it did feel like when you do this, when you play those wingbacks, Trippier and Shaw, Trippier is not a marauding fullback. He's a guy who's a tremendous delivery, but he is definitely not the attacking fullback he was and hasn't been all season, especially after 2 years of Cholo Simeone. And then you play Declan Rice. And then you've got Calvin Phillips deeper. It does feel like you're spending a lot of the game defending with eight men.
Mm.
And it didn't...
7+3, very much.
I mean, Robbo, and yet, that's a game plan. It's a game plan he believed in. And in the end, it worked. So I get the sense that the mood in England, and I'm not English, and Jules isn't, but you are, Robbo. Is the mood at this point, have they got on Malcolm X? Is it by any means necessary? And maybe it's unfair or unreasonable for us neutrals to talk about style and blah, blah, blah. Isn't it as simple as this idea that match up the opposition, make it difficult for him, wait for somebody to do, rely on a set piece or an impact sub or a mistake, and that's your best way to, your best way to go and win it? Do you believe that?
You may be right, but as you said, and when I said I said it's the easiest thing to match up with the opposition. That shows a lack of tactical acumen, I would say, if you just match up with the opposition. I thought it was very negative from Gareth Southgate. And in the other games, I wouldn't say they've been that negative. What they haven't been able to do, and this is my big worry about England, they haven't been able to find ways to get it into the front players. There hasn't been enough movement. They haven't created avenues to get the ball into Harry Kane. They haven't created avenues to get it into Sterling and get it into Saka or whoever's playing on the right-hand side, Foden. So that's been a problem with the tactics and the game understanding of Gareth Southgate. Against Scotland, there was crying out right from the very first minute, I can see the space on the field is going to be the two two fullbacks for England. The way that Scotland was set up with two up front, they were playing with three midfield players. If England switched the play quickly enough, they'd have got down the side and got cross after cross after cross into the box. It was as easy as that. They'd have got high up the field into the top third without any pressure. But Gareth Southgate couldn't see it, nor could the players. And that's what worries me about England. I think they will go and get to the final. But I don't think it's been a particularly inspiring performance by any of the England team at the moment, and particularly the manager.
I'll play devil's advocate, right? I'll wear my little hat of St. George or whatever you want to call it. The little helmet with the little slit.
You like that one.
Yeah, I love it. France are the reigning world champions. They're not adventurous. Portugal are the reigning European champions.
This is France 2018 all over again.
I would suggest there's a big difference, though, between France 2018 and this England team. And why also this Portugal-France analogy, which I made to be contrarian, I think is stupid. First of all, Portugal were good, but they were also fortunate, and they had Cristiano Ronaldo, who England do not have. Secondly, while we said England have a lot of really good players, they're not playing in this system. So France, playing defensively, still had Griezmann and Mbappe and Pogba. You know, the Griezmann England, back then, who are on a level beyond anything, anybody who's starting for this England team, except for a fully fit Kane, and he's not starting right now. So I think it's dangerous to play this way, because France had the individual solutions, which England doesn't have. I don't think it's a great way to play to begin with, and it can't come back and bite you, as we've seen.
Yeah, but for now, it's enough to beat Germany, to beat the Czech Republic, to beat Croatia, to beat Ukraine in the next round, because they will beat Ukraine, and like Robo said, to go to the final, because then they're going to beat Denmark or Czech Republic again. For now, it's enough. Then, if you get to the final and face Belgium or Italy or Spain, or less likely Switzerland, but I wish my cousin Swiss the best, then that might not be enough there, because you're right, it's very minimalist to start with, it's very pragmatic, and you still need something other than just Sterling running quick with the ball, or something other than bringing Grealish on to try to do something a bit special, which he did, to fairness to him, second assist and assist, as an impact sub for 20 minutes, is pretty brilliant. But I just don't think this would be enough to win you the whole thing. But for now, it is. So make the most of it. Take what you can from it, because I think it's a lot of confidence. I mean, look at Sterling. He's a different player than what even he was a month ago. You know, he had finished the season so badly for City. It's a completely different Raheem Sterling now. That's good. It's good for Saka. It's good for Kane to score. It's good for Calvin Phillips to have this kind of impact, certainly physically, more than with the ball. But physically, I think he recovered 11
he
balls.
Played a defensive game. This wasn't the Calvin Phillips we saw against Croatia, I thought.
No, for sure. So take all the positives like that, and then between now and the final, try to work on the things that are not working as well for now.
Robbo, there were several players you could pick out. I think most players said, oh, Sterling is man of the match. He scored again. For me, one of the single players who made the single biggest difference was actually Harry Maguire. At the back. I don't think that back three would have worked as effectively without his leadership. You can also make a case for Pickford or whatever. Do you agree with that, or do I just like Harry Maguire too much?
I thought Maguire was excellent. I think he made good decisions about when to run out with the ball, when to cover around. I thought he looked like the leader of that back four, because Stones made, I thought, some poor decisions in terms of his positional play. When Werner gets through in the first half, Stones almost said, go on, play the ball in there. His position was all wrong. And I think he made a bad decision when Müller went through as well. He slipped over. He wasn't quite sure whether to go and close the ball down or to drop off. He should have dropped off. Whereas Maguire made all the right decisions. He won a lot of aerial duels. The only way that they could get out at times, Germany, when they went from back to front, was to try and hit Thomas Müller. And every time, Maguire won the ball in the air. So I thought Maguire was excellent. He dominated that back three. He organised that back three. And he's the one player. They talk about Stones being a good footballer on the ball. Harry Maguire is much better with the ball than John Stones. He comes out at the right time. He knows when to pass it into midfield, when to go that bit longer. He was excellent.
And this is a player coming off an injury as well, which I think is all the more impressive.
Yeah, but maybe
as well.
Rested as well.
Okay, but he's still a guy who's coming. You can't have it both ways.
No,
guy comes back from
injury,
plays bad. Oh, he's not match fit. He's rusty. You know.
Yeah, except that the time that he didn't play compared to others who in that time played 10, 12, 15 games, that will help now.
Right.
After a season of 70 matches.
But whoever was responsible for his rehab, and Maguire and the work he did, I think he did a great job. Because
he hasn't
missed a step. I want to turn it over to Germany now.
Just something on Harry Kane quickly.
Okay, were you...
Because
okay,
we had a debate in France.
Sorry.
We had a debate in France. Ooh. It's an easy goal to score, right?
Let's ask Robbo. He scored more goals professionally than I have.
Harry Kane's goal, he was in the right place, he made the right run, he set the play up. I think it's a fairly easy finish. Ian Darko, I was commentating with, said it was a great finish. He had to stoop and bend his head slightly. I thought he was in the right place at the right time. Good run, easy finish.
But huge psychologically for him. And I agree with Robbo, I think it was an easy finish. For a player like him, come on, this is...
We've seen a bunch of stooping headers, actually, in this Euros, come to think of it. By the by, one other thing, should Harry Kane, obviously Harry Kane's not going to be dropped, right? But he came in for a lot of criticism for doing very little in the first three games. He scored this goal here. I was just looking on Twitter and stuff like that. Around minute 60 of that game, There were a lot of people, yeah. the punditocracy, all the ex-pros, the yeah. chattering classes, saying, all right, take him off, send on Rashford, yeah. send on Calvert-Lewin. This debate's all going to go away now, right, Robbo? Because he scored that goal, and Southgate's not going to mess with a winning formula. We're pretty sure of that. But should he?
Harry Kane, I don't think he's played particularly well, but I don't blame him for all the problems he's had. Again, I go back to the Scotland game and one or two of the other games. I'm looking at how they can get the ball into Harry Kane, and they're not creating any avenues to pass the ball. The midfield players are in the way. They're not moving players out the way. Harry Kane couldn't run in behind because players on the ball weren't looking to play that pass in behind. He tried to make a couple of runs. The players didn't see it. Then he's trying to come short, but he's going into a crowded midfield. So I think the tactics haven't helped him, but he hasn't looked at his very best. He's looked slightly off the pace. And I think we got into the game, half an hour into the game, and I said to Ian Dark, as I was commentating, I don't think we've mentioned Harry Kane's name very often. He touched the ball three times in the first half an hour. That was all three he touched times. The ball. That says everything about the way England were playing.
You know where I feel for him, and we discussed it a lot with Gab already, and I know it's about service, and that goal he scored, the service is perfect from Grealish, and I don't think he's had that kind of service before. But look at the chance at the end of the first half. Look at what he had to wait for Sterling to run and think that he can be Leo Messi and score between four or five Germans. And yet the ball had to sort of bounces off two or three players to go into Kane's kind of path, although it's quite wide, and that's why he has to take that first touch with his left, and then the ball goes away a little bit and Rudiger can clear it. But can you imagine if you're Harry Kane, that's all you have. That's all you have. In the whole first 45 minutes, it's a ball that sort of bounces off Gosens or Kimmich or Goretzka or whatever, because Sterling thought he could be Leo Messi for the space of 2 seconds.
I will say this, though, about Harry Kane. Playing for Spurs, it's not like he's surrounded by a bunch of ballers or, in the last year, you know, a team that plays 60% possession and keeps setting the ball up for him all the time. I think he's probably accustomed to it.
Yeah,
to some
still
degree.
A bit more service than
no,
that.
No, of course. You benefit from it. Let's turn it to Germany. We've gone through the many issues that this team has. I'm trying to project forward. First and foremost, if you're Hummels and Müller, do you still want to be a part of this Germany team?
I don't think so. I think it's time for them, and they haven't been good. I don't think they've been good in this tournament. It was a great story that they came back. And again, a bit like the Benzema story that we will mention later, if you bring them back before. Give them a bit of time to sort of readapt almost. Of course, they know everyone, and it's not a different environment than when they were there 3 years before. But still, you know, give them a bit of time. And I just don't think it was a successful comeback and return. And I think now, if you're them, you say, like, you know what, we're going to concentrate on club career. This is a rebuilding job. They're not part of the rebuild. What? So will you keep them for the 2022 World Cup?
It's only 16 months away.
It's only 16 months away. But yeah. I just think if you rebuild, then start fresh, start again.
Because Robbo, this is the thing that gets me a little bit. Not that I take any joy. Of course, I do take joy in raining on Germany's
parade. You love it.
Realistically, Hansi Flick, we all loved him. He said he's a genius when he won everything.
But he would keep Müller.
He did really well.
He would keep Müller.
I would assume so. But also, the guy who was replacing Jogi Löw was the guy who was Jogi Löw's assistant for a long, long time, even when Jogi Löw was being criticized.
And when Germany were bad.
Yeah, I mean, I think he left in the 2018 World Cup. He wasn't there for that, I don't think, whatever. But still, like, he is somebody who is part of that mindset. He is the Jogi Löw culture. When he goes to Bayern and he has Robert Lewandowski, and maybe a different environment around him with Hoeneß and Rummenigge and all the helpful people giving you advice when you manage Bayern, he goes and wins everything. But it's still the same thing. I mean, he's a continuity coach, isn't he, Robbo?
Yes, to a certain degree. But he also will come with tactics. We saw that with Bayern Munich. He played the highest offside line that you've ever seen. But you have to have athletic players, and you have to press the ball high up the field. So when you're talking about Thomas Müller still being involved in it, I'm not sure he can anymore. But the player that really struggled when he came on and struggled throughout the tournament was Gnabry, who was going to be the key player. He was going to be the player that had lots of pace. He came on. Grealish had an effect for England. Gnabry had an effect the other way. He lost the ball every time it came into him. So
yeah,
everyone was saying Timo Werner has to come off. But Gnabry came on and was even worse. So I think Hansi Flick will do a good job for Germany. I think he'll know exactly how he wants to play, whereas Jogi Löw, I think, lost his way. I'd seen them in the Nations League when they lost 6-0 to Spain. They were all over the place. There was a lack of effort. They kept on looking around to the coach. He wasn't doing anything. Hansi Flick will be an improvement on Jogi Löw.
So do we know that Toni Kroos is going to retire from international football? I think he knows that with Flick coming in, Goretzka and Kimmich will play centrally, which in what should be a 4-2-3-1, but I don't know, because my next point was, at least you've got Kai Havertz, and surely if you're Flick going forward, you have to build this team around him, right?
Yeah.
He's ready to take over now.
I think your cornerstones going forward have to be Kimmich and Goretzka, as you said. Goretzka, great player, but really your cornerstones, the ones you really put everything around them, have to be Kimmich and Havertz. I think, because so many of these other guys, Leroy Sané, Gnabry, Werner, very talented players, huge upside, but they've also all shown that they can be inconsistent, not just with the national team, but a club. I mean, Sané, this goes back years, right? That is the one thing that makes me uneasy. I would feel like I can't be reliant on them. I will play for Havertz. I will be patient with Havertz, knowing that he's still very young. He's still a little raw. He still hasn't necessarily found himself, but his skill set is such that, you know, I want him to be the centerpiece. But my concern, though, is further back. What do you do with these defenders, Robbo?
Well, I mean, that was the problem that Bayern had with Hansi Flick. The first season, it worked really well. They played a high line and nobody was quite used to it and people kept on running offside. In the second season, players started and coaches started to realise if you time your runs and you keep playing balls in behind Bayern Munich, then you're going to cause them problems. And if he holds that high line with the players he's got at the moment, I don't think Hummels will play. Ginter is too slow. I think Rudiger has got the pace to hold a high line. If he brings someone like Sula in, he again can't run, and he had problems for Bayern Munich. So Hansi Flick has to have a big think about how he's going to play tactically.
Don't pick on Sula.
No, he should pick on Sula. Sula can't play for Germany. He's not good enough anyway to play for Germany, whether he's quick or not.
We will table the Sula discussion for when...
I don't know why you love Sula. I don't know where that's coming from.
Because
what makes you love him?
He's the world's biggest right back when he plays right back. I don't know. Obviously, you can't keep a suicidal high line. Fine. And also because I don't think Rudiger's got it in him either if he's going to be a part of it. But there are other ways to play. You don't have to play the way he did with Bayern. And by the way, they can keep that high line because Lewandowski covers every blade of grass because Müller was a psychopath back then defensively and so smart. And he's still smart, and I think he can still get it back for a while anyway. And they have people like Coleman who killed themselves off the ball and Gnabry. You know, but that was a different reality. There's different players.
You know what they should do?
We're going to see a different flick.
They should do a Laporte. They should try to get one of our centre-backs. I mean, we've got so many anyway. Not that we picked the best one to go to these bloody Euros, but, you know, get a Konate, made him German, and then he would play for them like Laporte plays for Spain.
How about a Konate Upamecano?
Oh, my God, imagine for Germany to win the World Cup in 2020.
Robbo, thanks so much.
Always a pleasure.
Thank you, Robbo.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, Jules, for the avoidance of doubt, I am wearing the Switzerland hat for the start of this segment.
Okay, for the
fun. I will remove it, but I want to make something very clear to everybody out there that I did remove the hat at the beginning of extra time. The hat is not the reason
Are you sure?
Look, extra time is all down to Switzerland and that, and maybe some deficiencies on the part of France, which we will get to. A big question. I will now remove the hat because, honestly, this is so ridiculous. I don't know who could look cool in this hat. Like, it's certainly not
me. Even Granny Chaka.
So I'm going to chuck it over there for now. But I'm going to need to know, I'd love to hear from our listeners, whether we should put the hat back on for the Spain game.
Yeah, of course. And now you can't do that to me. You can't just use the curse of the hat just on my team and not on other people's team.
All right. So having gotten that out of the way, commiseration. I want to make something else clear. People said we gave this game short shrift. The reason we gave this game short shrift and the Spain game short shrift is because we were recording. We didn't do a full preview because we were recording basically like a couple hours before kickoff. And for most of our listeners, they would have heard this afterwards. So all that out of the way.
I
don't want to put you in the spot. Everybody wants answers from you. I will just give you my general sense of why Switzerland have advanced and not France. I think part of it is Didier Deschamps is not a great coach. Part of it is if you switch to a back three, it has to look like something that you've actually practiced before. And it did not look like they practiced it before.
Because they didn't.
Benjamin Pavard as a wing back is an opprobrium I never want to see again. Yeah.
Benjamin Pavard is a football player.
Whatever. You haven't played as a defender, that's fine.
Yeah.
And then there's a great sense of confidence, which is great. But at the same time, you cannot switch off. You cannot take things for granted. And that is the part that really shocked me. Beyond that, the penalties and Mbappe's miss. Like, you play this game again, it's 9 out of 10, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree.
But there were lessons that these players should have known that you cannot switch off. Because at the World Cup, they did not switch off.
No, they were ruthless, which didn't happen this time around. They're 3 years older. They're world champions. Maybe complacency comes a little bit when you are world champions and you feel like it and you think that it would be easy to do the same thing maybe as 3 years ago, because complacency, and we said it about the Hungary game, and it happened again. At 3-1 up, they thought they'd won the game. It's interesting, Gab, because
that was the lesson to take forward into the next game.
But what's interesting is that in those last 15 minutes, let's say, Paul Pogba wants to go and score the fourth goal. He said, they're on the rope. We have them on the rope. Switzerland are on the rope. We are so good. We're so much in control. Let's go and score the fourth, and then we know it's over. And Deschamps, on the other hand, is saying, like, stay safe. Just not see this game out. Stay safe. And I think there was a bit of a, okay, what do we do? Some wanted to be like Pogba and keep going forward, keep attacking, keep scoring. Others, like Rabiot, wanted to do what Deschamps was saying. No. Let's drop even 15 yards and let's just make sure that we don't concede again. And I don't know how much that played to it, because I think credit to Switzerland, they didn't give up. They kept going. I think they should have attacked far more on their right-hand side and our France left-hand side, where Rabiot was there as a makeshift left-back and then Coman was ahead of him. So pretty much no defending. And that's where the second goal came from. But I wonder how much that played, because they were just not on the same page, plus the complacency, plus the slow start. You can't give a head start to a team like Switzerland by messing up your first 45 minutes like France did. It was a disgraceful decision by Deschamps to do that tactically.
We're going to have more of an inquest into France, naturally, but I just don't want to make this about France, because I think there's a lot of credit to be given to Switzerland and to Pekovic, especially given how poor they were in the first two games. This was a game where Granit Xhaka showed up. It was a game where Seferovic showed up. It was a game where, I mean, when Lloris saved the penalty, I thought, all right, mentally, this is where it all goes to pieces, right?
Yeah,
because
and he did.
There's nothing that's more of a momentum killer.
Yeah.
When,
and
but then
did.
They came back again.
Yeah, but I think they came back at the end because France let them, credit to them, they didn't give up and they kept going, which is great. But France let them come back into that game. You know, the ball that Pogba loses on the third goal from Gavranovic. He can't lose the ball. I know there's still a long way to go, but
if we lived in England that long, that we're going to go and blame everything on
No, at all, because he was the player of the tournament before the last 10 minutes. But I still feel again that in the last 10 minutes, France lost that game as much as Switzerland won it.
Jules is so depressed and so upset that we haven't even celebrated the Karim Benzema techers. There will be a lot more. We're going to get a little more granular on the Gab and Jules podcast. Jules, let's stick with Switzerland a little bit before we'll go back to France, just to give you time to prepare.
Yeah, thank you.
I go back to All right, Granit Xhaka, we've seen him have tremendous games. We've seen him have poor games. This is one where he obviously showed up. Remo Freuler, who had less of an impact at this point, until this point in the competition, certainly showed up and had an impact. Mm. But it looked to me like Switzerland basically said, all right, we're going to try to be organized. We'll be dynamic. And you know what, France, we watched the last World Cup. This idea, which we discussed earlier with Robbo as well, that, oh, you win competitions by being defensive, is frankly just a stupid idea. It's something a child would come up with. No, seriously, I don't want to hear it. It's just complete nonsense, right? And I don't even think that that's Deschamps' idea.
No.
But it is what he knows how to do. It is what worked. But I can't go beyond that. That said, like, if we get organized, if we deny space, if we force them to move to a three, it's going to screw up their midfield because it's just going to be a different dynamic in the middle of the park. It's going to put more of an onus on the front three. And let's be stout. And then if we're beaten by something special, and in two of the three goals, arguably all three goals, and the Coleman chance as well at the end, it was something special that you can't legislate for. But he said, we're going to make them do something special through individuals. We're not going to be beaten by the system, partly because we're going to be organized and partly because Deschamps doesn't have much of a system.
Yeah, and I think the Swiss were delighted that France switched to a back three and changed completely everything, had Pavard and Rabiot as wing backs, because that played into their hands, because they themselves had a back three. They knew exactly how it was working. When you have Ricardo Rodriguez as your left centre-backs, you know exactly what they're going to do. This pattern of play with him and Zuber ahead of him is so well-drilled, so well-known. And I'm shocked that Deschamps didn't even see this one coming, hadn't even prepared for it. That then Pavard had to come out on Rodriguez, which then let Zuber on his own pretty much. And everything, every time a Swiss player had a ball in this first half, there was always someone free because the French were a mess.
It looked to me like they had never seen Zuber before.
But it looked to me like they'd never seen Switzerland before. You know, Deschamps was on French television before the Switzerland game. And it sounded like, so maybe his answer was a bit clumsy or something, but it sounded like he was almost surprised that some teams had a formation when they had the ball and they were attacking, and then switched to a different formation when they didn't have the ball and had to recover it and get it back or had to defend. And I was like, really? Really? You really don't think that you can switch from one formation to another depending on if you have the ball or if you don't have the ball?
Not exactly a novel concept.
What kind of preparation did he do for these Euros? What kind of mindset was he in these Euros? Did he just think, and we go back to complacency and arrogance and confidence, did he just think that put those 11 players pretty much the same as in 2018 and they're going to win the world, they're going to win these Euros with Benzema on top, but he can work his magic? Well, like, come on, there was no plan, there was no direction, there was no thread, there was no organization. He changed, he had four different formations in the four games that they played. What's this? Like, this is not the Avengers.
Right. Let me ask about this, because most managers who are like Deschamps, who are man managers, nobody's going to mistake Deschamps for a brilliant tactical mind. They normally have a number two, who, you know, is the X's and O's man, who is the guy who studies the opposition, who, you know, in the end, I'm not saying that they're like the genius because they get things wrong too, but like they kind of dissect the information, put it to the coach, and then the coach makes informed decisions to the best of his ability.
Yeah.
Who is Deschamps' number two for France?
Guy Stéphane, who is Julien Stéphane's dad, the former Rennes manager who did really well at club level. But Guy Stéphane has been this guy for Deschamps. Really, Stéphane has been that guy, and he's also close to the players, he's close to us, the media. He's been very good to protect a lot of things, to absorb a lot of the pressure for Deschamps. And maybe you're right, maybe in this tournament, their relationship was not as good as it used to be, maybe, or as efficient as it used to be. I don't know, but certainly there was something missing. There was definitely something lacking in their approach of the tournament. I mean, the Benzema, double-double, two goals against Portugal, two goals back-to-back against Switzerland. You're right, his first goal and that first touch is just extraordinary. Not many players in the world can control the ball like he did. This is like Dennis Bergkamp v Newcastle kind of first touch. It's a genius touch. But why bring him in so late into this? If you were going to do it, you didn't think about it in May. This is not true. Deschamps must have thought about bringing him back way before he did in May for these Euros. Because the problem, Gab, is that you bring him back in May, he has those two friendlies against Wales. Okay, they were down to 10 men after right. 2 minutes. And then against Bulgaria, the next friendly game, he comes out after half an hour because he was injured. So basically, you bring him in the team as a starter with no games to test it, no games to work on it, only a training when, you know, we know that right, training is not really when you practice those kind of things.
There is an argument to be made, and I take your point, and you can also say he didn't have a lot of training sessions and so on, but you have an argument to be made that this is not the reason France are out of the Euros.
No.
And also, in some ways, I know they're different players because Benzema is more dynamic and he covers more ground, but ultimately, Benzema is replacing Olivier Giroud,
yeah.
right? So you're getting a high work rate, physical presence.
Yeah, but look now, at the Giroud-Griezmann partnership or even the Giroud-Mbappé partnership. For how long have you been working on it? How many games have they played together? How much they had to work on their, how complementary of each other they could be, and it worked. Benzema and Mbappé, and as much as they love each other and there's that bromance, which I think, by the way, caused a bit of tensions within the camp that they were so close to each other. But, you know, I think you need time. You need time with even with geniuses like them.
You could turn it into like it was like the Zidane Henri thing, where like it was like a million games before Zidane set up Henri for his goal. Is it?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. 06, okay. Between 98, 97, and 06. But that, we all didn't right. have to wait that long right, there because right. they did it against Switzerland. But
there's been some fallout. The inevitable Veronique Rabiot speaking up again. Can you just shed some background on this?
This is something else.
This woman's a superstar, by the way.
I mean, Veronique Rabiot, who's Adrien Rabiot's mum and also his agent and also like his god, really, let's be honest. As you know, all the players' families, which is not just with the French team, with every single team, all sit in the same stand, all together at the games. And again, it's exactly the same for pretty much every team. Except that Veronique Rabiot, towards the end of the game, was not happy with Kylian Mbappé. So because she was sat behind Wilfried Mbappé, Kylian's dad, she's starting saying to him that he was not playing for the team, that he should tell off his own son for being so arrogant. So you can just imagine how Kylian Mbappé's dad felt and the response. Then she went after Paul Pogba for losing the ball that led to the Gavranovic, the Switzerland third goal. So you can just imagine the Pogba brothers, the twins, their reaction to her shouting at their brother, blaming him for conceding that goal.
I'm assuming these are some big, tall men as well. Yeah?
They're huge. They're okay. huge. Huge.
Are they bigger than Paul?
They're bigger than Paul, okay. yeah. They're wider than Paul. And there are two of them. And I'm just like, okay, we've all been there. Our children play sports. You know, they play in teams where sometimes our children are not very good or there's other kids that are
yeah,
not.
But normally you're trained. I mean, in some countries they have very specific things about parent behavior during games.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird when it's your adult son who's in this situation.
And yeah, exactly. And this
who by the way, is not exactly, I think his career thus far is fair to say, given the number of clubs he's been at, given the things he's been involved in, given
and
the way he left
well.
Those clubs, right? Yeah.
And
you're
her.
Not exactly a model example for everybody, yeah?
And it's not surprising.
It's not N'Golo Kante's
no,
mom saying,
exactly.
Why can't you be as good as N'Golo?
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
And then you're like, all right, fine, you know?
But it's something just again, like, and you're thinking of it. There's already the downfall of the elimination, the humiliation, the way how you threw the game away, Switzerland, blah, blah, blah. And then on top of that, you get this story and you think like, oh my God, this is so French. But it's such a French thing.
It's so unnecessary.
It's so unnecessary.
All right, couple housekeeping things. One is Deschamps, I'm assuming he's done, yeah? Does he really want to stay?
Yeah, he does. He does want to stay. Certainly yesterday he wanted to stay. The Federation want to keep him. The players want to keep him. He might still change his mind. And I think he will take a few days now to sort of
I'd be careful because you're heading for a Yogi Löw situation here. In other words, the guy who wins something, the guy who reaches a final and then wins something, and then the players like him, oh, look, he's won. He signed a contract. And he realizes that just as there really was no market for a club side to take Yogi Löw, and that is part of the reason I think he stayed all those years.
But
I don't see that there's a big market for Deschamps, frankly. because I think people can look at it and they can see what he brings and say, yeah, he can win with this group of French players, but I don't know if he has the nous to do it at club level.
Yeah, maybe.
And so there is a risk that it goes stale. But
there's also the World Cup in what, 16 months? You can stay for 16 months and you play on the sort of pride chord of those players saying, hang on, look, we messed it up.
Yeah.
We messed it up. But you're so much better than that. He said to them after the game in the dressing room, respect yourself because you've achieved a lot already. And, you know, this is bad and this is disappointing. But you're much better than this. And I think for 16 months, it's short enough. It's not the 3 years between 2018 and 2021 for Yogi Löw, for example, which felt like 10 years. This is 16 months between that, nine.
That's
and
a really, really good point.
Do you see what I mean? And then he can play and say to them, listen, show me. Let's all go together, redeem ourselves. Let's be together again. Let's be that group that we were not really in 2021, but we were in 2018. We can go back to that. Let's go back to basic and let's go again. And after that, he will leave. I'm convinced if he stays now, he will leave after 2022. But yesterday, the sources that I got, both from Deschamps and the Federation, was that he would stay, but he can still change his mind. I think the gap is too short between this Euros and the World Cup that I think he would want to stay and get that kind of reaction from the boys.
And so Zizou's going to wait.
And I think he would be happy to wait.
Yeah, and maybe Zizou's got other things in mind. All right, two other quick things. One is, a lot of people on social and so on, you know, it's the Insta pundit reaction, putting a lot of blame on Kylian Mbappe.
Yeah.
And saying, oh, look, now he's not going to win the Ballon d'Or, which I don't know if he would have won it anyway. But is that fair? Is it just everything gets magnified in a game like this?
I think it's unfair. I think it's magnified. Listen, he's not perfect by any means. He's got such a high opinion of himself. And this is not a criticism. This is true.
He's very confident.
Yeah.
Is what we're gonna
super
say.
Confident. He is arrogant. Because I think, because he's a genius and because for a very young age he had those very high expectations of himself, of where he wanted to be. Even when he was 15 or 16 at Monaco and he was not playing with the first team, he was like, what's up? What's going on? This is not right. You know, I deserve to play. He always had that. I don't think you can blame him for wanting to take the fifth penalty and for missing it. It's not a great pen. It's not a bad pen either. It's a summer save. Okay, I think great players have missed penalties before in World Cups, in Euros. It can happen to anyone. That doesn't make you a bad player. He's only 22 years of age. He's still so young.
I think the argument is, could he have done more in the 120 minutes?
Yeah, there's a chance that he missed.
Was he prepared for the 120 minutes?
He looked a bit leggy, I think. And it's been a long season. But maybe he was too selfish in that game. Maybe he was. And maybe he'd been too selfish through the whole tournament. I just think he was also key on the two Benzema goals against Switzerland. He was key in the Germany game. I don't think he did too bad against Portugal, and he got the penalty that brought France back in the game, even if it was a really, really soft penalty. So I don't think it was all bad during the tournament, although he didn't score. I just think it's hard. And I think, again, for me, anyone who blames a player in a penalty shootout, whether that's Gareth Southgate, Roberto Baggio, Michel Platini, or Kylian Mbappe, for the team losing that penalty shootout, they know nothing about football. Because
no,
I think it can happen to anyone. It's a mind thing. It's not a lottery. It's a mind thing. And maybe he was just not there yet for that penalty.
All right. Final question for me, just to wrap this, because I am curious about the shootout. Maybe it's happened before, but I just never noticed it. The way the first four French penalty takers all took an eternity before they shot. You can go back. There's like seconds. And
but was the referee long to whistle? Because
From the moment the referee whistled.
Because I thought he took a long time to blow the whistle.
No, but from the moment he whistled to the time, I mean, you see it's three or four times as long as the Swiss players. To the point that, I don't know, like, oh, are they... You know, we're like Pogba's one. I'm like, oh no, is he getting nervous? Is he overthinking? And they're like, no. And then they got me thinking, all right, this is something that they practice and maybe they agreed to do, because it seemed weird. Mbappe is the one who didn't then. Has this been a talking point? Has anything emerged on this? Was this a strategy to wait as long as...
Because theoretically,
the referee can book you, right?
Yeah.
But then again, it's never actually... I've never seen anybody being booked for taking too long. Right.
No.
And it does mess with the goalkeeper's mind, right? I mean,
I'd be surprised, because the one thing that I know for sure, Gab, is that
they don't practice the stuff.
Exactly. And this is not team. We've lost the last three penalty shootout that we played in, including, as you gladly remember, the 06 final. None of our goalkeepers have ever stopped a penalty in the last three penalty shootout. Lloris went, he touched one, but apart from that, he went the wrong way every single time. I think the Zuber one.
When's the last time you had a goalkeeper that wasn't like a Smurf? That didn't look small in the goal?
We never had. Even Lama, even Joel Batz, even Bruno Martini. So I'm going back 80s now, early 90s. Lama, Barthez, Lloris. No, I guess Mandanda is probably the biggest, the tallest that we've had. And he played a bit and then became second to Lloris anyways. Maybe, I just don't know. I think Lloris, although he stopped Rodriguez one during the game, which, as you say, should have been the turning point. But before that, he had not stopped any of the 16 penalties that he faced with the national team. How can you do 0 out of 16? So that's 1 out of 17.
It's a bit harsh. I'm not going to have a goalkeeper for not stopping penalties. So Switzerland move on, and they'll be taking on Spain.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit $1 million stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify is your no excuses business partner. Sell without needing to code or design. Just bring your best ideas and Shopify will help you open up shop. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Because businesses that grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/gabjules, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/gabjules now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/gabjules.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
Throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Enough, France. That's a promise, not a threat. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
Now, Jules, in normal conditions, we would have led with this. That Spain-Croatia game for the neutral was something else.
It was just incredible, Gab, the way Spain played to start with and led in that game. And they were, I thought, fantastic at times. And then the way Croatia came back in the second half, where I think our friend Luis Enrique, who we dearly love, made some changes. For example, and this is just my own theory I share with you, if you're doing well and you're winning, why change one of your two centre-backs? No reason. Keep them until the end. Why did he feel the need? And I know Pau Torres then set up Ferran Torres for the third goal with that great diagonal, but I would not have touched that defence at all. It went back to 3-3, incredible. The problem is, to come back to 3-3, Croatia had to pretty much put all their forwards on the pitch together, which meant Brekalo had to play right back for the whole of extra time.
And that's Brekalo got completely lost.
Exactly. That's when the imbalance cost you compared to the Swiss win, for example. But for Croatia, it was good to fight like this, but Spain deserved to win. And to be fair, they could have easily won 7-3 or 8-4. It was incredible.
Yeah, I just don't know what you get with Lucho going forward. I'm a fan, but some of his choices, some of his individuals.
He's a bit all over the place at times. Ukraine are through, beating Sweden with a dramatic late goal from Martin Dovbyk in the final seconds of extra time. Gab, you were there.
I thought this was a great game. Yeah. I was so entertained. And obviously it's different when you're there. Was it as good as the Monday games? No. But two teams went at it. Emil Forsberg, fantastic. Yeah. I described him as part Ewok, part Berserker on the pitch. I think that fits him quite well. Ukraine had their moments. You like your filthy passes? What about the pass to set up The Zinchenko one. Come
is
on.
He real? Do you think he really aims it at Zinchenko?
Or he just absolutely does the little slice. Sure. It's like a golf. It's like a trick shot in billiards. Yeah. Absolutely brilliant. And then this dude Dovbyk, who comes on. It's only his third game with the national team. He's played 51 minutes against, no disrespect to all our listeners out there, Kazakhstan and Bahrain. Yeah. Just chucks him on at the end. Perfect ball from Zinchenko.
Oh, yeah. Great
scores the winner. Choice. Celebrates, takes off his top. He looked like Brandi Chastain in her bra, celebrating.
Yeah,
sports
exactly.
bra, of course.
And he's there because Junior Moraes got injured before the tournament. Otherwise, he probably would not have made the squad anyway.
The guy was playing in Moldova not that long ago. He's playing for Midtjylland and Sønderjyske and those weird Danish teams that sounds like medicine.
Great Come story. On, one of the stories that we love.
Absolutely. Frank de Boer has resigned as Holland manager. He says, quote, "It's not healthy for him to continue." Yeah, that's it, Frank. Make it all about you.
Yeah.
Just kidding. He's talking about the pressure of the job. Hey, Jules, this isn't surprising, yeah?
No, it's not. We had fun. It was really fun. Thank you, Frank, for offering all those great moments, you know, getting players wrong, numbers wrong, all of that. And you entertained us in the group stages. And then the level rose, and then you were not good enough, which we told you were not, and we told the whole world. So it was the right call for everyone, I think. Let's see who they get in, though, because it's still a tough job. Because as you saw, when the media go against you, not just us, I mean Dutch medias, it can get really...
Well, you know what's really dangerous, and he cited this as one of the issues, is they didn't start World Cup qualifying well. And they have a... If they screw up these next set of qualifiers, then it gets really, really ugly.
So thank you for dropping them in it as well, basically.
Well, thank you for stepping aside now.
Yeah.
I think he saw the bigger picture.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Gab, there's no plans for Fernando Santos, the Portugal boss, to step down and from the federation to get rid of him anyway. Should there be? Surely, come on.
Well, where else are they going to get somebody who's won a major trophy at international level? Unless they go back to Scolari. Remember when they did that?
We talked about Deschamps and Jogi Löw, and I think Fernando Santos is also in the risk of going too long.
I think a lot's going to depend on which players stick around. I think part of the problem was he was loyal to certain people who'd done so well for him in the past. I'm not having a go at Pepe. I was right to start him. And until those last minutes when, you know, the screws came loose, he did fine. Or I'm certainly not talking about Cristiano. But I think he's anchored to a certain system, to a certain way of playing, which does Portugal no favors. They've got better players, they've got different players. I think it's time to move on and freshen things up. And do it now that Mourinho has a job, because otherwise it's going to be Mourinho. You know that.
Yeah,
he's unemployed.
That's true.
Lionel Messi becomes Argentina's all-time most capped player. He's gone one better than our boy Javier Mascherano.
Yeah.
Their 4-1 win over Bolivia at the Copa America. We're impressed, yeah?
We are. 1-4-8 caps, which is great. And there's more to go. I don't know how
high. Cristiano has more.
Cristiano has 1-7-8, I think.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Cristiano's also scored more goals.
Yeah, he has. Against,
I'm joking. Stop it.
No, joking. And Bolivia were bad. Trust me, they were bad. But Argentina were really good. And again, a bit of rotation. Everybody is involved. Everybody plays. It's good before the quarterfinals that we will mention a bit later on.
And his focus is going to be rested for the knockouts.
It's promising. It's really promising. Let's say
we don't want to jinx it. Never won anything. Not a great Copa America experience.
Olympic Games, but this is very promising.
And the Under-20 World Cup.
And also, meanwhile, Gab, the clock is ticking. The big countdown is moving closer to zero. As on Thursday night, is it? His contract would be expired.
It's not Thursday.
Unemployed.
It's the night between Wednesday and Thursday. We're recording this Wednesday morning. There's less than 12 hours to go until he becomes unemployed. I was wondering about, you know, these players have insurance and stuff like that. Has he sorted that out? Because there's going to be some period of time. I'm not worried about him making rent while he's unemployed. But
what I want to know if his Barca is still selling his shirt on Friday or Saturday.
We've spoken about this at length. It makes no sense that it hasn't come out yet.
Yeah.
Everybody say no, he's going to stay. They've sorted it out. It's just details, Jorge Messi, whatever. It's fine. But I think until that ink is dry, and until he's signed on the line that is dotted, to quote one of my favorite films, you're not going to know.
No.
And the uncertainty will hang over you.
It could well happen on Wednesday after we've recorded this and before it drops. So we just warn you.
Yeah, so bear that in mind.
Yeah.
It's another chapter in the Jadon Sancho saga. Some dude tweeted at Marcus Rashford last night and said, quote, "Announce Sancho." By the way, Twitter etiquette. I absolutely hate that. I remember United I think it was for the Munich air disaster. They tweeted some memorial. The first dude just writes, "Announce Pogba." Few days ago. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Come on, man. Yeah. Anyway. But Marcus Rashford played along and he just replied, "Yes."
But what I love, it's not just a yes. Then he put a little X, for the kiss. After, it was so cute and so sweet. Like we've been saying for days now, it will go through. It's literally in the latest.
But I love the fact that Marcus Rashford is now the United spokesman. Come on.
Exactly. It's brilliant. Bild are heavily linking Manchester United to another Bundesliga player. This time, Leon Goretzka. Gab, is this a thing or simply the fact that, let me guess, Goretzka is looking for a new deal at Bayern Munich?
He's part of the army of players who got a contract in 2022. Needs to extend the deal. Look, he's a phenomenal player. He'd do a good job for most teams. I think at United, Goretzka, Pogba, Bruno might be a bit much balance-wise.
Maybe.
But who knows? No, I would assume United. I mean, we'd be mad for Bayern to let him go. Make no sense.
Yeah.
We have more news in the Tottenham saga. Nuno Espirito Santo, very close, according to multiple outlets, including The Telegraph. Jules, we like this, no?
Oh, my God. This is going to be fantastic to watch. Not just Nuno. And again, let's remember the brief that Daniel Levy gave us and all the boxes that the new manager should tick. I'm not sure how many Nuno really ticks. But him and Jorge Mendes arriving as Spurs. Paratici being
there. What's Paratici going to do? They'll have the director of football there, and George Mendes, Uncle George.
Yeah, exactly. Uncle George will be in charge.
I don't get this at all. To me, this makes zero sense. I'm hoping this is another one. Remember, the Gattuso one was just about done.
Yeah.
Fonseca.
But I thought he didn't go for Gattuso also because Jorge Mendes would have been heavily involved, like we saw with Fiorentina. So.
Maybe. I have no idea. This makes no sense. Let's just wait until the announcement comes out and then we'll opine.
Yeah. Another deal that seems almost done, Gab, is Rafa Benitez to Everton. We mentioned it a little bit a few shows ago, I think. They could be announced very soon. What do you think?
Well, I think it's a wonderful chase here. Who's going to get their business done sooner, Spurs or Everton?
It is, actually.
And it's worse for Spurs because obviously they knew way back when Mourinho left that they needed a new manager. At least these guys have the excuse of Carlo leaving.
Yeah.
Look, I don't like it when people break fairy tales. Rafa Benitez has a lot of history. I think when he hits a road bump, people are going to remind him of that history with Liverpool. Also, style of play, I'm not sure this is exactly what you want. If you're Everton, you're trying to build a brand and differentiate yourself. Christophe Galtier wins Ligue 1 with Lille. And so what does he do? He moves to Nice. Jules, why is this an upgrade?
He likes projects. He likes building things. I think he felt that at Lille, they would sell the best player this summer, which is probably true, to be fair to
him. Like they did last year and the year before, and he still won the league?
Yeah, but I think that's tiring. Every time having to rebuild a team that make it competitive.
So at Nice, you're going to have worse players, and if they do well, you'll still sell them because it's
not as big. Well, I'm not sure. They've got one of the richest men in the world as an owner. I'm not sure the business plan is the same as Lille if you're the Nice manager.
And then there's no DNCG and FFP on the...
I think they're building something very, very interesting in Nice in terms of project for the club, the money that they have, the way they're going forward. Some of the young players that they have are really, really good. I can see why he was more attracted by the Nice project than by a Lille project, which is a bit uncertain. We saw it with Monaco. But you've got good cycles.
Can you also see why none of these clubs, we've talked about Everton and Spurs managers or even...
Makes no sense to me.
Nobody showed any interest.
Incredible. I cannot believe that neither, or maybe they did and I don't know, but I know Galtier's people pretty well and they never said that any of the English, but, and he would love to come to England. He was learning a little bit of English. He would have worked harder on the language and everything, but I'm amazed, really amazed, because I think he's a tremendous manager tactically in terms of man management. Let's see what he does in Nice, but I think they picked the right man for sure. Crystal Palace are also on the verge of confirming their new manager, and it should be Patrick Vieira. Gab, I'm former Nice guy. I'm a bit confused because the shortlist was Nuno or Lucien Favre, and now Vieira, which is three complete different profiles. So what were they really looking for?
We've said this before. I don't know. I don't know. I, you know, my views. I don't think this is. I don't think this is a very well-run club at the top level. I'm not talking about, you know, Roy Hodgson did what it said on the tin, but going back years with some weird stuff with Pulis, and they have a ton of older players. Many of them are out of contract. I guess the thinking is we can build from the ground up for Patrick, because we're going to have less weighty contracts. But I was speaking to one of those analytics types who said that analytically, Crystal Palace were the worst team in the Premier League last year.
Yeah.
And they've been trending in that direction. Now, worst team in Premier League means you're worse than Sheffield United, who had, like, what, 4 points by the end of the season?
I think it's a big gamble for Patrick. It really is. And I know he wanted to come to England, and no problem. He was looking for the right project. This is a hell of a project.
Now, there obviously aren't enough Zlatan biopics out there, Jules, but a new one is on its way. He told us himself.
He put out yesterday the trailer of his movie, the movie of his life.
And it's Jude Law playing Zlatan, right?
Jude Law playing Zlatan.
Young Zlatan.
I would have loved to see, like, such a big, like, huge name to play Zlatan.
Jude Law is not big enough for you.
No, I mean, like, bigger. I didn't even know if Jude Law was still doing movies. I mean, what's the last movie that you saw from Jude Law?
George Clooney can
the
play
Holiday
old
or something,
future
like
Zlatan, right?
10 years ago or something.
No, I was thinking Talented Mr. Ripley, which is probably also like 20 years
ago. Yeah, like 15 years ago. I don't know. I'm excited. I'm going to go and pay. Of course I will. And pay this, which is probably not going to be very good.
Is he in the film?
I don't think he's in the film.
Is he executive producing it? Like, is he paying for the film about himself?
Yeah,
because that's awesome. No, that's even beyond Cristiano. Like,
yeah,
that's
another.
Other people pay to make movies about Cristiano. Zlatan pays to make films.
I wouldn't be surprised. I don't know. It probably won't be very good. You know, like some of those football movies. I mean, even to be fair, the Roberto Baggio.
Oh my God.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean, I watched it, and in a way I liked it, but in another way I didn't. I don't know if that's going to be the same way. But yeah, we will go and see it.
You know what's odd about the Roberto Baggio one? Just as a digression. Okay, so I watched it. Obviously, I watched it in the original language, in Italian, and the actors are Italian. And I have this thing where, like, because these faces, like Sacchi and Baggio, are so familiar, and obviously you get actors who kind of look like them, but it's not them.
Yeah.
Like, and the Sacchi one has the accent all wrong and everything. I'm kind of like, it just looks cheap. It feels cheap, you know?
It's hard. I think they're hard to make. In fairness,
and then when they dub them, the other thing I don't
make.
Get is when they dub them, they all have English accents. And again, this might be a subtle thing, right? Baggio has a very distinctive regional accent of where he's from, Caldogno, in the Veneto region, right? Baggio talks a very specific way. Instead, they have Mr. Anodyne English Received Pronunciation voice actor man doing it. I mean, I almost wish I know it's a big digression, but hey, it's a podcast part, I can do this. I almost wish they'd gotten regional accents, right? Like, get a Geordie actor.
They should have done West Country
or a Scouse guy. Yeah. Or something that you feel fits. Have the family members talk like that. Because that's half the film.
But you know what Baggio deserved? Baggio deserved a proper documentary like the Diego Maradona one that Asif Kapadia, our friend, made. I really felt watching the Netflix one and being not disappointed, but being like, this is bad.
As opposed to a feature film about him.
Yeah, like a proper documentary when you go and find footage that we've never seen before, where you can actually see him properly training, playing. That's why I would have loved to, because I think he deserved it for the career and everything that happened to him in his career and his life and all of that. Salernitana, I thought they were promoted to Serie A. We mentioned a little bit before what happened with who their owner is and everything, and now it looks like they may not be in Serie A next season.
Nothing against Salernitana fans, the people of Salerno, but they should not be, or maybe relegate Lazio. Because
it's one of the two. As we said, you can't have the same owner owning two teams in the same league.
Claudio
Lotito,
who owns Lazio, and look, you can go and look him up on Wikipedia for his history. I'm not going to get into that. He decides, I need to own two teams in the same pyramid. And he knows Salernitana are on their way to getting promoted. And they tell him, you cannot own two teams in the same league. Actually, now they've passed the law. You can't own two teams at all in any league. Even you can't even own an amateur team and a professional team, right? And still he goes on. And he says, no, I'm going to set up a trust. And look, I don't own Salernitana. It's my son and my son-in-law, my business partner, whoever the hell these people are. Dude.
Come on.
Honestly, you're making a mockery of the whole thing. And you know the worst part?
That's exactly the
worst. So now they're talking about, you know, oh, maybe Benevento will stay up. Maybe they'll bring up Empoli or Monza from Serie B. It's not going to happen. You know what's going to happen is, you know, I don't like lawyers. I really, really don't like lawyers.
You really don't like them.
I'm not saying they're all bad, but, you know, 98, 99%.
Yeah. And the German lawyer is even worse.
German lawyer, my God. German lawyer in the Italian legal system, which is diabolical and is slow and goes on forever, you know what's going to happen is Lotito's just going to go and tie this up in courts with his army of lawyers he has on retainers. And at some point, like, oh, no, Serie A is the start. Okay, we'll figure this out later. And that's it.
You're right. You're probably right.
I mean, seriously.
Which would be wrong.
You had time to sell the club. This is blind trust nonsense.
I know.
Seriously. Anyway, we'll see. Okay, Jules, let's have some prediction fun. You know how much I love predictions.
You do.
As both the Copa America and the Euros are at the quarterfinal phase, let's start with the Copa. Tell me who you got. I'll tell you if I strongly disagree. Okay. Peru and Paraguay.
Oh, I think Peru have been fantastic.
Vamos Peru, no?
Of course. They've been fantastic in this competition.
Brazil and Chile.
That's a really interesting game.
It's not interesting.
It is interesting. It is interesting because Chile have been very efficient. Very efficient.
As long as they don't get the COVID hairdressers in. Uruguay and Colombia.
Brazil will go through. Uruguay, I think.
Yeah, I think
Colombia,
this one's
close. James Rodriguez. It's a close game, but I think Uruguay will win.
I think and Argentina and Ecuador. Come on, Messi's
Leo Messi. They've been really good to watch as well so far in this tournament. And now, Gab, let's do the same, but for the last eight in the Euros. So again, you give me first your prediction and I'll tell you if I agree. Czech Republic against Denmark.
And Denmark, let the fairy tale continue.
Yeah, come on, damn senior. Italy, Belgium.
Ooh. All right, I picked Belgium to win it all. I got to stick with that.
What? No Italy? Oh my God. All the Italy. Oh my God. This is. Just, oh my.
Between
God.
De Bruyne being out and Chiellini being in.
I go with Belgium as well. Switzerland, France, Spain? Switzerland,
yeah, nice try, yeah, nice try.
Okay. Switzerland, Spain. I was not sure. I could not read properly the name. I thought it was France.
I'm on the Lucha. Enough with the France. I'm on the Lucha bandwagon.
Yeah, me too.
We all are. Let's move on.
Yeah, England, Ukraine. Surely, no upset possible. Yeah,
logic says England, but you know what? The way everybody's talking, like, oh, should we rest players for Ukraine? Nah, come on, man.
Nah,
come on, show Ukraine some respect.
England all along.
But yes, I'm going to go England. Right, that brings us to an end. But we'll be back. We're going to be back to look back at all this, aren't we?
Of course, Monday.
Absolutely. Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.